Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for spring semester 2022. Today, financial statement analysis with ratios. Before I get down to the main topic of today, we have our traditional look at the screens for a little bit. And just to get the ball rolling, sir, is this a good day or a bad day? Or is it, well, let's put it this way, is it a bull day or a bear day?
It's bull.
Bull, you have to say it. No, bull. Bull day, yeah. Okay, bull day. Okay. Now, we had, I had all these texts. Is this the crash? This is the crash, isn't it? Okay, well, it came up. What do we call it in a bull market when we have a day when it goes up? You remember what we call that? I'll give you a hint. Meow. Dead cat bounce. Yes, a dead cat bounce. And that cat bounce. Matter of fact, that cat was bloated. It bounced, boing. And as you can see, the classic pattern is there. Look at it. You have the Dow up a decent, respectable 0.84%. And then the broader, Standard & Poor's 500, up more, 1.5%. And then the NASDAQ just rip-snorted almost 2.5% up so far today, and we've still got some left in this day. This is definitely a dead cat that has some bounce in it. And it's one of those things where you don't bet that this will happen, okay? It can, you have to look at the conditions. Now, I was expecting the dead cat to bounce yesterday, but it took another day for it. The one rule in this is that you've got a bear market. Now, the way that we used to say it is you should not be in the business of catching falling knives. And so trying to profit by going bull in a bear market is always going to be a particularly risky venture. Although, like I said, if you see the signs that there's a cat about to bounce, and I took a position a little bit early, so I lost some ground yesterday when it was still slipping, but then today I've made major ground back because it's rising in the dead cat. But like I said, that's you're taking your chances trying to catch falling knives like that. That cat might have just splatted instead of bouncing, so. But we did have a decent day up. And if you look at some other things, crude oil is back on its tear. It's not going to be denied. You remember that it was actually down some. It was shaving. And now it's coming back. Like I said, it wants 100. And I don't know if we'll see it by spring break, but sometime this semester, later in the semester, we'll see it cross $100 a barrel. And that's going to be expensive gas. As you can see, gas prices are already beginning to come back up. And so once they get up there to 100, there'll be enough that's going to cause political problems for the incumbent administration. It's also going to add to the problems that are already going to happen if we have a war in Europe, because Russia pushes a lot of hydrocarbon products across the steppes and into Western Europe and to refineries on the coastal waters down into Turkey. And so if there's war, that could disrupt oil supplies out of those oil fields in Russia and in other places like Kazakhstan. And that could cause the price of oil to really spike if that happens. The war gets more involved, and you start getting secondary actors in the play, or terrorism in the Persian Gulf, or in the Strait of Hormuz, or something, or in the Indian Ocean. Then we could see $150 a barrel easily. I don't think the way I'm seeing it right now, I don't think that's going to happen, but it's a possibility. Gold and silver. clearly this was a day when there was just nothing in gold and silver. So there was cashing out, investors pulling out of the metals and buying stocks with it. Bonds went nowhere. It was like there was a little bear action at the beginning, then a little bull action. But I mean, for the most part, the investors are not paying attention to bonds right now. They're seeing this dead cat bounce as the opportunity to buy back in and let the equity party continue as it had before. Rolling on over here, as you can see, Financial Times was doing pretty well, although there at the end, you see that slide off in the later afternoon trading over in London? I don't know. No, yeah, they should still, well, I don't know about that. The bell may have already rung over there. Yeah, I probably have. That's right. It's afternoon. Okay, and the Nikkei took a pretty good hit in the early, and then the bulls tried to pull up. It looks like there was bargain hunting on the 225. And then it almost crossed, looks like it might have even broke a little bit into up territory. Now, one thing, and then it lost some ground there at the end. One thing I want to look at real quick here, let's look at the actual Standard & Poor's 500. Let's look at volume. Okay. Volume. You see, it was a roller coaster of a day. This is almost a heart attack day. I mean, up and then down and then up and then. But the volume. Okay, OBV for the day versus the 52-week. OBV for the day versus the 52-week. What do you see, ma'am? Look at your volume. What does volume say? How many shares? 1,000,000,000. Just say it is $1.3 billion. Okay, now, with a little more force and a little less reticence, tell me what the typical day would be. 3.2 billion. So was this a heavy trading day or a light trading day?
Light.
Very light. There's no pauser. That is a very light day. In other words, a lot of the money was staying off the playing field here. This was a day when we did have an up day, but that was an up day on very light volume. The heavies are, as I've said before, they're staying out of the way. It's for them, it's a wait and see. They've got their portfolios positioned. They'll do some marginal adjustments here and there, but for the most part, this is not a time when you either buy or sell. Sometimes you just sit back and you just take your time and find out what's going to happen next instead of just constantly attacking and charging. The heavies just kind of sat there and said, we want to see what the Fed's going to do. We want to see what this whole situation in the Ukraine is going to, how that's going to play out. We're still worried about China and its military aggression over on the other side of the world. And we have other issues, too, that may cause us some problems in the short run. So the heavies were staying off the field right now. OBV was less, well, we still got some time. It'll probably end up being only about half of what it typically is. That's a very light day. So even though we did have a definite bull day, that was a bull day with not all of the team players on the field. Take that for what it's worth. This is how we think about markets. We look at them like this, and I'm teaching you how to think like this, to talk like this, because even if you are not going to be an active investor, if you can show that you know the terminology, some of the con artists and the scammers are going to stay away from you and find someone who thinks he knows everything but talks like a toddler. Enough of that. Now, as I said, we're going to do some Excel today. And I want you to get comfortable with doing this Excel because there will be a place in an exam where you will have to know how to do this yourselves. And the larger part of what I'm going to be doing here with Excel today, and you'll have Excel out if you have a notebook with Excel on it, I mean, that's what you want to do is pull that notebook out and get to this, what I'm going to do. The Securities and Exchange Commission requires that all companies report on a regular basis their results of operations. If a company wants to be public, it has to have a high, high degree of transparency. That is best achieved through the financial statements. A little bit of background. Stock exchanges and stock sales and bond sales have been going on for hundreds of years. We get into the later 1800s, and the scammers and the con artists and the liars, the cheats, the greed-driven families were just having a party. And it was at the expense of the nation. And our government was the best government money could buy. The idea of democracy was democracy for the wealthy white males, period. That's the reality of it. And to this day, there are efforts to get us back to those good old days like that. People don't seem to remember what was happening. We had storms of collapses of banks in the 1800s, recessions that lasted for years. We bitch about recessions that last a couple of quarters. Back then, they lasted years, and a lot of that was because of the ripoff artists went too far and buckled the economy over and over again. There were attempts at different kinds of reforms, but realistically, the 1920s was the ultimate of free market, laissez-faire, leave it alone, the best government is no government, let the markets take care of themselves, they're self-correcting, blah, blah, blah. Three consecutive right-wing conservative presidents, no regulation of the financial markets, no regulation, and miserable working conditions, and the rich were getting richer and the poor were getting poorer through the 1920s. And it just got to the point where by the time you get to the late 1920s, the game had gotten to sort of a critical point. No one was stopping these greed-driven sons of bitches from what they were doing. And so we came into 1929. We were already in technically very bad economic conditions. Most people were living miserably. And I mean, the conditions in the workplace were horrendous. Kids were working, getting their little arms ripped off in machines. Women were working like dogs, and men were working in factories with no safety protections whatsoever. And any attempt to bring a union on board, well, there were the cops and the courts and all of these private militias like the Pinkertons to beat the hell out of them. And finally, on a Black Monday in 1929, the stock market crashed. And it was spectacular. No, none of the rich people jumped off buildings, unfortunately, but it was still spectacular. It was awesome. Well, the administration, the president and the Congress, we're still swearing to God, all we have to do is just calm down, it'll be okay. And they pretended to put a few patches on it. As a matter of fact, the president at that time, he actually had these villages built for poor people, except they weren't there. They were just fronts, but there wasn't anything behind the front. They were called Hoovervilles. And in 1932, the bastards were thrown out. They were just kicked out, all of them. It was a rout. I'm not talking about something like 2008. I'm not talking about something, some joke like 2020. They literally kicked every one of those sons of bitches who was in the pocket of the rich out on the street from Congress and the presidency. The president who was elected, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, said, the rich hate me, and I welcome their hatred. And we had the era of reform. Now, you can bitch all you want about reform and how it's just bad for business. And all of you wallow, just like me, we wallow in those reforms and what they did to make us live better lives. In 1933, the Securities Exchange Act was passed. It put regulations on offerings, initial offerings of stock. It required massive disclosures and continuing reports, and it created a commission that would oversee enforcement of securities laws. In 1934, the Securities Exchange Act was passed, which controlled the secondary markets and what they could and couldn't do. In that same time frame, the Glass-Steagall Act was passed, which made banks behave themselves. They couldn't offer ridiculous interest rates and pyramid schemes. They couldn't run a brokerage house over here and then advise people to buy the stock over here. They put up what we call a Chinese wall. The Glass-Steagall Act ended in 1999. And all fun broke loose after that. Well, no one could have seen that 2008 crash coming. Really? Okay. Well, here's the reality of it. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm a capitalist. But I can't stand cheaters. I really can't stand greedy sons of bitches who take from the poor and take from the middle class. So you understand that when I talk about these laws, I don't complain about them. I talk about how stupid some of them are sometimes. But this is how we have an assurance in our country and in the developed world that what you see as an investment, if you make mistakes, we all make mistakes. But some of the mistakes you make are because you're too stupid to look in the places where the information is. And that's where I don't have sympathy. In this class, you will see where you go to the sources, not to Yahoo Finance, not to Earl's Financial Advising and Stock Market website, not to idiotic Investopedia, not to Cramer and all of his buddies who are on the take. I show you where the source information is, and you have the education to look at it and know how to read it. That's what I do in this course. Now, here on the SEC site, the reports, and I think I have, actually, this is a link, sec.gov, but if I don't, this is not just for this class. For the classes you're going to take, which will have more advanced expectations of you in terms of your research, this is original source. Companies must tell the truth here. It used to be they could lie. Back in my time, lying was part of the game with these reports. And then the lies got to the point where some terrible, terrible things happened at the end of the 1990s. And a muscular law was put into effect called Sarbanes-Oxley, SOX. It made it so that the officers and directors, the outside auditors and the attorneys have to sign these statements that are provided to the SEC, which means that if there's a lie in there, those people can be civilly prosecuted and fined, and if it's bad enough, they can be criminally prosecuted and sent to prison if they lie. Now, that deters all but the complete sociopaths. To give you an idea, Tesla lied in financial disclosures, and the company was fined. So what does the president, the great pothead, do? He goes on Twitter and calls the SEC vile names. Yeah. So take that for what it's worth in terms of managerial style. I guarantee you that if you did that, you would be some hard-timer's buddy at a federal prison. Filings. Company filing search. Now, I'm going to give you... Oh, quit it. Will you quit this? Now, back in my time as a consultant, I actually prepared these kinds of financial statements for companies. I did. This was part of what I did. Little companies that... There were two different flavors. Little companies that went public. Wow, we're in the big leagues now. We got stock market tickers, that kind of thing. And then there were companies that did a stunt called a reverse merger, where they would find a dead public company, and then they would insert their living private company into it. It was like doing an end around of SEC regulations. But then, sure enough, they'd be contacting people like me. We're in a public company. We're getting letters from the SEC that we're out of compliance. Really? So you thought that you could pay and get yourselves and do some dirty tricks and get control of a public company, and then it was just lolville from there? No, what? You haven't filed K's and Q's? You took this over 2 years ago and you haven't filed K's and Q's? That was where I came in. Okay. Now, so these filings, I'm going to use Target, TGT, or Target, if you will. Now, I caution you against just typing in a company name in that window back there, because sometimes you'll actually run into a bunch of companies that have the same name. Now, I hate to say this, but it happened to me a few years ago. I typed in a company name. I didn't know its ticker symbol, so I just typed in the company's name. And there it is, click. And I went over and I looked at its financial and I thought, these are weird. I never thought this company was like this. And I saw that it was a darn bad investment, so I didn't invest. Company stock popped, and I thought, what in the world? And I went back and I found out that I had typed in there was another company by the same name as the company that I was wanting to look at. So there you are. Okay. The 10Ks and Qs. We call these the Ks and Qs. Quarterly and annual filings by the company required by the SEC under securities law. They must be filed, and they are honest. They are thorough. I mean, I'm going to show you what one of these looks like. Back in the day, before electronics, we had to file these in triplicate on paper. And then this electronic system started being tested, and I was one of the original Edgar filing agents back a long, long time ago. And then later, they kicked me and the small players out because it turned out that it was so lucrative that only important accountants and lawyers could do it. So anyway. Now, the K's and Q's, I usually look at a K instead of a Q just because you get annual data. The 8K is for non-recurring events. You have to say this is something that out of nowhere would have happened. So, for example, you, sir, are the CFO of Megacorp International, and one night you are abducted by aliens. I must report that on Form 8K. Our CFO was abducted by aliens. Now, I don't have to go into a lot of detail, even though we know for a fact that you were out in a cow field tipping cattle with your friends and just accidentally got picked up into a tractor beam by a passing alien mothership. Do I have to disclose that? Well, some of that's kind of personal, you know. But I do have to inform, because the investors need to know. The CFO isn't there anymore. Okay. That's an 8K. I have to file the 8K, non-recurring event. Turns out, you show up 2 weeks later. It seemed that you and several of the cows took control of that ship, and you turned it around, and you actually stopped on one of the cattle slave planets, and you rescued all of them, and you came back here, and now you are the king of the cows. We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. That's you. So I have to report on AK. He's back. And then you tell us you quit because you're making more money as the king of the cows. So I have to file another AK. God, man, you know. I try to make real examples, okay? Okay, here we go. See, these are the Qs. Actually, this K, they're coming up. Target is coming up for another K here soon. I'll pull this one up, though, just so we can look at it. Now, if I wanted to see the document itself, here it is. These are included in the document. If you click on hyperlinks, these exhibits pop up in the original document. But here's the actual document. This is a Form 10-K. That is one large puppy. And this is what you do. Back in my time, we actually prepared these on paper, and then we would do it in triplicate. Where I had my advantage in this was that back then there weren't a lot of computers around, especially computers that had the kind of word processing ability. And so it looked like I was some kind of a hero, but really it was just word processing, what we can all do now. I'll tell you right now, if I had put color into a document filed with the SEC back at that time, they would have sent someone to kick my legs. But, okay, now, I want to show you something down here real quick. Look at all this information. This is the original source information. And in these documents, companies are very honest. They have to be, because the SEC will kick their asses if they're not. And another interesting thing, normally shareholders can't do anything to a company if it goofs up, things go bad. But if the shareholders find that there were lies in this document or misleading information, they can actually sue in what's called a shareholder's derivative suit. So these companies, they tell the story, and it's very honest. I'm going to show you one section here in a minute, but let me take you down here to the end. Notice all this financial information. Look at all this stuff. But I'm going to take you down here to the end. Oh, signatures. And there are more signatures on another document. That's what I was talking about, Sarbanes-Oxley, SOX. You lie on this, those guys might even go to prison. That's why there is a high degree of reliability. Because I have found, and most of you will find, that honesty is always nice to hope for, but a good kick in the ass promised if you aren't honest is better. And that's what the Sarbanes-Oxley does. And yes, it has been used quite a bit for liars. And so the big companies, they don't even mess with it. Okay, this is what we have to do. I want to show you this right here. Item 7 is the management's discussion and analysis of financial condition and results of operations, what we call the MD&A, management discussion and analysis. I'm going to take you down to this just to show you. You read this document, this part. This is where the people in the company are brutally honest with the outside world about what has happened. They break down the numbers and they say, this was good, this is why this was good, this was bad, this is why this was bad, this is where we will have to do better, this is where we probably can stay where we are. It's really an honest, what we call glib, document about the story of the company. Now, when you are writing term papers in your career here at Illinois State University, going here, you are not going to some analyst on the outside. You're not going to some opinionator. You're going to the horse's mouth to see what the story is. And you can have a very high degree of a reliance that this is honest, and they're not going to try to hide and lie about what they're doing. That's why it is so appalling when you have a company like Tesla, run by a man who's such a bully that he can get people to act against the law in disclosures. That's a terrible situation. That's why if you want to invest in it, more power to you. Know what you're getting into, though. You're getting into a company that will lie to the SEC, and then when they get caught, the president of the company will badmouth the SEC right on a social media platform. That's your choice. Okay, anyway, now let me take you back here. Really? I'm going to do it this way. I'm going to go back to that K. Now, you notice that I was playing down here. There's a nice little blue button here. Nice little blue button. Now, that's interactive data. Oh, look, financial statements. Well, we can just look at these and write down some numbers and do everything we need to do for financial analysis. Oh, what's this? View Excel document. Well, I wonder what happens if you save that file. It's an Excel sheet. Must be something. Obviously, it's probably some numbers. Oh, it's not just some numbers. It's every number possible. These tabs for a public company can go 50 or more. Every freaking detail on the company. The notes of the notes, all of the major financial statements, minor financial statements. You'll even find a spreadsheet, a worksheet on here that has the salaries, the executive compensations on it. Every possible number is here. This is gold if you are doing research. It's also a very nice thing to have if you are looking at companies that would be good prospects for employment. You can go through here and see every detail of every number in the company. You can go into an interview highly informed. Hell, you can even go into an interview and they say, well, you know, we're having some difficulties now, obviously, so it'll be about $45,000 a year. And you know damn well they're lying. You just saw their financial statements, the ones that they say give to the SEC that can't have lies on them. So they can lie to you all they want, but you could look at here and you would know what the real story was. This, I can't emphasize this enough. See, in this one, in these spreadsheets, once you have them, they're yours to do whatever you want. And that's why I can bring these up and have you bring them up, and then we can start to put together the story of a company, the ratio analysis, and other kinds of calculations. We can even create our own graphs in here with Excel graphs and then export those to a paper that we're writing. And when you source, you say this is from the SEC Form 10-K of Target Corporation for 2021. You can cite it, and this is authoritative. There is no question that there is nothing that would be a source closer to the reality. That's why I strongly encourage this. And now there are all kinds of things you can play with here. I'm going to, now, for analysis of financial statements, and I just said this on, let me check something. Yeah. I just said this on Monday night to my MBA class. And I say it to you, that MBA class is basically this class except for MBAs. But I said it that when you look at take this out, the first thing you don't do is attack. Well, I got to get these calculations done here. No, you don't. You look at it. You appreciate it. You look at the numbers in their, what they are showing you overall. You, madam, you see someone walking down the street, very nice looking, pleasant person. Do you go right up to that person and take a scalpel? Let's have a look at that liver.
No.
I appreciate you for not doing that to me. Because some of the streets I was on in Chicago where I lived, I mean, they would see how much of an appendectomy you needed, okay? It taught me to walk in the Russian community and not speak Russian. Okay. The thing of it is that you look at these financial statements. And you go from the top to the bottom, and you just get a feel for the animal. I mean, we can do math all day long. As a matter of fact, there are computer programs that grab these the instant they hit Edgar and just pull them apart, and then all of a sudden, boom, within seconds, all of the ratios are there. I'm going to even show you where you get those. It's just, I thought this is insane because they just published this a few hours ago, and already every ratio, I mean hundreds and hundreds of ratios and breakdowns and curves and charts and all of this were right up there because these machines can do it. So where does that leave us? It leaves us still with the human quality of looking beyond the numbers and hearing what they are whispering. And if you listen to some companies, they're whispering. Think of yourselves as the financial statement whisperers. You go up to those financial statements and you listen, and you know what you might hear? This company sucks. If you just look at it, I'm going to even show you how those ratios can absolutely mislead you. And in some cases, it is such a dramatic thing that in my time in oil and gas, in the wildcatting in East Texas, I was there at the time when financial ratios had lied for so long, they were so misleading, that people were died. Many people died because the ratios were trusted instead of asking, why is this ratio doing this? So let's look at it. I'm looking at Target. Now, full disclosure, okay, I am a Target hoe. I go there all the time. So, I mean, if I'm saying it's a good company, that doesn't mean I do love to go to Target and just walk around in there and have them ask me to leave after 3 or 4 hours. But there you go. You look up there at the very top. At the very top, what do you see at the very top of that? Talk to me. What do you see up there at the very top? I've got to keep my social distance. I apologize for that. What do you see up there at the very top? Look at that row right there at the top. No, not the 12 months ended, for God's sake. I'm talking about the total revenues. What do you see? Is it growing or is it falling? It's growing. I mean, that is amazing, especially when you consider that this is the era of that stupid ass Rona, which is still hunting me down. I mean, every day I hear a knock at the door at my flat, and I open it, and there's Rona. Hi, fat boy. And I shut the door. But they're growing revenue-wise. Look at that. That's something right there. Just I see growth, okay? Now, that's probably something that's a good thing. Because here's something. If a person is dead, they stop growing. So I see, and I also don't see decline. Many companies, well, we lost revenue because of all this. Well, I understand that. But I also understand, holy cow, they grew in a time of adversity at the macroeconomic level. That is not bad. And then I go down from there and I look through these numbers and I see, okay, now I know I'm not supposed to appreciate net earnings because I'm a finance person, but I see freaking growth of profit. So not only were they growing in revenues, apparently they were controlling costs. So I see signs and indicators of a company that is healthy. Now, we'll go through this several different ways. Ratio analysis is one way. Unlevered free cash flow is another way. But I do see the symptoms of something that is okay. Now, I've got to dig in really deep because sometimes real problems are hiding under the surface. No doubt about that. But I will look at the balance sheet. I said balance sheet. There it is. Now, if you want more years, those are in those exhibits I showed you. You can get more years out of there for the balance sheet. They're required in these in this Excel sheet to show 3 years of income statements, 2 years of balance sheets. But it gives us a sense. Well, holy cow. Well, cash certainly did go up. That worries me a little bit. Now, I would really need to see some numbers on this. There's one called the current ratio, current assets, current liabilities, and all that kind of stuff. But that concerns me a little bit because, you see, when you have cash, you're not earning anything. Cash is great to have because it protects you from circumstances. I have some cash in my pocket. But if I have too much cash in my pocket, that means that I've got money, I've got something, an asset that earns nothing. See, the higher the liquidity, the lower the expected return. The higher the liquidity, the lower the expected return. The higher the liquidity, the lower the expected return. Now, I just said that three times. Do you think that might show up on a test? Yes. You'll hear me do that sometime. I'll just repeat this. See this money right here? I got enough for some cheeseburgers. But I'm not earning anything off this. There's no money. I'm not earning. See, if I were to put this into a savings account or into a stock market, I'd earn something, but I would not have it right there so I could pull it out. So there's that trade-off, and I'm a little concerned. It looks like they almost quadrupled their cash position. Now the question would be, why? Say it. Are they that scared? I mean, that would be true. You're right, though. You could have they could be just absolutely paranoid about something bad happening, and they've just got a huge buffer. Another thing, more than a few years back, Netflix borrowed an insane $1.2 billion, and they borrowed it on junk notes because it was so much, and Netflix is so risky in some ways that it had to be sold in the junk bond market. And you know what they did with that $1.2 billion? They put it into cash. You understand how insane that was? They're paying this high interest, it's junk, on this capital. And what do? They put it into cash where it doesn't earn anything. So everyone was saying, either they have a plan or they're on crack. Well, it turns out it was probably both. The thing was, in their case, they put that money into cash so that they could very rapidly start new shows, lots of them. Just dump new series into the market. And that they couldn't put that cash into something else. They needed it right away so that within a month they could have a cycle from the first time an idea is proposed through to the script for the pilot, through to the first season, get the talent, get everything together as far as the equipment, the gaffers, the lights, the audio, all of it, and then have it out there just within a month. Stunning what they could do, but they had to have that as cash to do that kind of extreme flexibility. That's the thing, though, is they were losing money because they were borrowing at a high rate and they were not earning anything with the cash in the bank. But they would earn money by throwing that rapidly at new product program content. And then cancel half of the series once I'd gotten interested in them, damn them. Anyway, and keep idiotic stuff like Witcher and Stranger Things. Oh, well, I shouldn't say that. Yes, I should. Irritates me. They knocked out Longmire. Okay, now. Oh, well, yeah, Supernatural. But, I mean, Dean and Stan were getting old. But I still like pie. Okay, now. We're going to go through more of this on Friday, break it down, and we'll have fun together then. I'll let you go for that now.